Let me thank each of you for being present on this second day of our lectureship class entitled Reverse Culture Shock and the Missionary Family. On our return as a family from Argentina in the early 1970s, we experienced a certain degree of reentry shock, or as we call it, reverse culture shock. Through the 1970s, as we were readjusting to the United States, an increasing number of missionary families sought our assistance. Part of this was due to the fact that I'm a licensed psychologist in the state of Texas, and part of it was due to the fact that we had a minimal amount of experience on the mission field. The hurt among these families who were coming to us has been and continues to be very great. Some families have experienced problems of drug abuse with their children, abortion, suicide. Other children have become psychotic, and many parents have become depressed, evidencing serious depression over a considerable period of time. One missionary, an ACU graduate, was talking with Wendell Broom on one occasion, and Wendell told him of my interest in research on reverse culture shock. This missionary came to my office and said, "Clyde, I'd like to share our family's case history with you, and you may feel free to share it with others when you lecture publicly." He and members of his family had been in a highly civilized country for approximately 12 to 13 years. When they returned to the United States, it was just like running into a brick wall for each member of their family. The oldest daughter had an abortion after an inappropriate love affair. The second oldest child, another daughter, tried to commit suicide two or three times. And the youngest child, a son, had become a drug addict. What a tragedy. This missionary has agreed to write his family's case history for me. Now, it's appropriate to observe that a certain amount of reentry shock or reverse culture shock is normal. However, if a person does not function normally, he or she might need some special assistance. When we say that a certain amount of reverse culture shock is normal, we mean that a person might experience some difficulty in readjusting for a 6 to 12 month period. Now, you might say at this point, "Clyde, what do you mean by normal?" By normal, we might indicate behavior that would be seen as out of the ordinary by a spouse, by children, one's peer group, students, and our relatives. Now, yesterday, in our first session together, we talked about the four stages of a normal pattern of response. Let's review those just quickly. Stage number one in a normal pattern of response is the excitement stage. That's the period of time when we're the object of much attention, of pride, and of excitement. That's also the time that we enjoy eating our mother's homemade ice cream and molasses pecan pie, all of that good ham and our turkey. So the first stage is excitement. The second stage in a normal pattern of response is reestablishment, when we might experience some degree of frustration and irritation with traditions and customs in the United States. The third stage is that of sense of control. We might, in our efforts to gain control of our situation, scapegoat relatives, friends, and co-workers. We might indulge in what Dr. Ruth Yuseem of Michigan State calls cheap moralization. Cheap moralization is, for example, when a person might say, "Well, we're more religious than you," or, "When we were overseas, we were more dedicated than we find you to be in the United States." The fourth stage in terms of a pattern of response is readaptation, when we have finally learned to use skills in appropriate circumstances. So the four stages in a normal pattern of response upon reentry are: number one, excitement; number two, reestablishment; number three, sense of control; and number four, readaptation. Now, with these stages of response in mind, let's look once again at the missionary cycle, which I shared with you yesterday. You'll note on the screen that the cycle is in the form of a circle. At the top of the circle, selection. Then, of course, training or orientation of the family or families or of the single individual or single individuals. Then entry upon the field, adjustment to the field, the particular mission country selected. And it's appropriate to note here that our major challenge throughout this cycle is keeping the individual or the family members whole, W-H-O-L-E. Then we move through the period of time on the field to the reorientation point for reentry to the United States, and then the actual reentry itself. Now, in focusing our attention on a reentry, we gradually came to realize that our focus was too narrow. We feel now, after considerable further study, that if we do a better job of recruitment and a more thorough job of selection and training, then the individual or the family will have fewer problems, hopefully, on the field, and fewer problems upon their return. And so it's wise to invest much time and energy in the proper recruitment, selection, and training of missionary candidates. Sheila and I had the opportunity this past summer to pause in our research on reverse culture shock and develop a team-building workshop. Even though we lost some 3 months of research time on reverse culture shock, we felt, for the reasons that I've just given, that it was appropriate to develop a pilot team-building program. Such a team-building program has four basic goals: a more in-depth awareness of individual differences of team members; number two, the improvement of the communication skills of group members; third, a careful look at group process, which team members hold certain roles in the group. For example, which ones are clarifiers, which team members are initiators, which ones are tension relievers or group clowns, and which ones, of course, are stabilizers in a group. The fourth goal of such a team building workshop is stress and its management. The initial culture shock on the field, problems in the area of human sexuality, time management, and then, of course, as we've indicated, the proper management of reverse culture shock. And so a team building workshop should have at least these four goals and possibly others: a careful study of individual differences, number one; two, a greater emphasis on the improvement of communication skills of team members; three, a careful look at group process; and then four, a careful study of stress and its management, teaching individual team members certain appropriate coping strategies. Now, with the missionary cycle in mind, in its entirety, let's look at the results of the first major research study of returned Church of Christ missionaries. I'd like to recognize at this time Miss Leslie Moore of Abilene, Texas. Leslie has been a splendid student in the Department of Psychology on the undergraduate and the graduate level. She has only one B in a swimming class in 5 years of thorough academic work with us. We said to Leslie, holding a 2x4 over her head, Leslie, you would like to do a thesis on reverse culture shock, wouldn't you? Well, she willingly accepted, and we're thankful that she has authored an excellent study on the effects of reentry on hundreds of returned Church of Christ missionary families. Briefly, let me describe the study to give you the overview. She prepared a questionnaire which went through about 10 or 12 drafts, including a thorough examination by our missions faculty. This questionnaire was sent to 604 returned Church of Christ missionaries. From the 604 missionaries, we received 400 questionnaires. Of the 400 returned questionnaires, 288 met the requirements of our study, the chief of which was that the missionary must have returned from the mission field within the past 10 years. As you will note a little bit later, actually about 70% of the 288 missionaries returned from the mission field in the past 5 years or less. And so in terms of recency of results, we are very pleased. Now, what were some of her major findings in terms of initial culture shock experienced by missionaries as they arrived on the field? Before we look at this list, may I mention two very interesting studies. One was reported in Social Change. It was entitled Training Needs of Overseas Americans. Peace Corps volunteers and missionaries were asked to rank the importance of certain training needs for Americans working overseas. The Americans said that the most important training need was human relations skill. Secondly, understanding of other culture. Third, ability to adapt. And fourth, technical competence. Language ability was rated 7th on the list. Now, it's interesting to note that 131 nationals or citizens of the countries where these individuals were working also said that human relations skill was number one, understanding of our culture number two, and ability to adapt number three. The nationals themselves felt that language ability was number nine. And so you can see that Peace Corps volunteers, missionaries, and the nationals with whom they were working felt that human relations skills was number one in terms of training needs. Another study, which is related to this area, is that conducted by Dr. Cedric Johnson and David R. Penner, entitled The Current Status of the Provision of Psychological Services in Missionary Agencies in North America. Dr. Johnson and Mr. Penner sent a questionnaire to all of the major mission boards of the United States. They said, when your missionaries require psychological counseling, what are the primary areas of difficulty? Table 1 of their study indicates that relationships with other missionaries ranked as the foremost problem. Cultural adjustment, number 2. Stress, number 3. Children, number 4. And marriage difficulties, number 5. Miss Moore found in her study, as we turn now to the findings of the thesis, that working with other missionaries was the foremost problem among missionaries on the field as they began their work in the country of their selection. So you can see that Leslie's findings are corroborated by these other studies. It's very, very important, then, that our team training for missionaries underscore the importance of interpersonal relationships. Other findings in terms of the initial culture shock arriving on the field were as follows. The second highest ranked problem was that of language. Third, as you can see on the screen, sponsoring churches, understanding of needs. Fourth, obtaining adequate funds. And then fifth, attitudes of national Christians. So these are the five foremost problems of missionaries as they work on the field during the initial months of their missionary work. Now, the primary focus of Leslie's study, however, was on reentry, a reverse culture shock. What were the major problems of these missionaries, those returning the 288 questionnaires? Now, as we view this transparency on the screen, we note that the major problem of returning missionaries, at least in this study, was attitude toward affluence or materialism. The missionaries were saying, in essence, that as they returned to the United States, they had difficulty relating to the affluence and materialism of this country. Two families in an earlier survey in Abilene, as we were doing a pilot study for this major research effort, indicated that they went to local supermarkets and purchased nothing. They were emotionally overwhelmed by the wide variety of choice available to them. Dozens of kinds of shampoo, for example. 20 or more kinds of Duncan Hines cake mixes. Many different kinds of soft drinks. And many varieties of English peas and beans. So, number one, as you note on the chart, is attitude toward affluence and materialism. The problem which ranked number two among these 288 missionaries was nostalgia, or homesickness for the field. In many cases, perhaps the missionaries were idealizing the field where they had served, thinking more highly of that field than they ought. The third major problem was feelings about circumstances of termination. Four, attitudes of U.S. Christians. Back in March, I was on the Michigan Christian College campus, and I was visiting with some returned missionaries. In an informal Austin's Gallup poll, I said to the man of the family, "What was one of the most difficult problems you confronted when you returned?" And he said, "The attitudes of other U.S. Christians." He continued, "We were in a family reunion in the Metroplex area, Dallas-Fort Worth area. After working 8 years in a major country of the world, our relatives talked with us about 5 minutes about our work and then continued a discussion of the Dallas Cowboys." Now, that's only one example of the kind of response which confronts our missionaries when they re-enter the United States. And so the fourth highest problem, attitudes of U.S. Christians. And then the fifth problem on the list, as you will note, is obtaining adequate income. Now, let's turn from these problems on culture shock and reverse culture shock to additional findings of Miss Moore. You'll note the transparency that I've placed before you. Let's simply quickly scan this list. The first statement on the list, reverse culture shock was worse for these missionaries than culture shock. This is in keeping with other studies conducted on returning missionary families. As we noted yesterday, there haven't been too many studies, but the few studies that have been concluded have all said that reverse culture shock is worse than culture shock. About 25 years ago, Eugene Nida of the American Bible Society said in Practical Anthropology that he suspected, although he had not conducted any studies, he suspected that reverse culture shock was more difficult than the initial entry on the mission field. And now the few studies that have been conducted bear out his practical observation. Secondly, younger missionaries experienced more reverse culture shock. Stated another way, The younger the missionary, the greater the degree of reentry shock. 3, there was no difference between men and women in terms of reverse culture shock. 4, on reverse culture shock, educational level made no difference. Type of schooling, whether high school diploma, college degree, or school of preaching certificate, made any difference. 5, the individuals in our study said that it normally took 6 to 12 months for readjustment. 6, 85% of the subjects were 45 years of age or younger when they returned. One thing that troubles me about this finding is the question, where are our experienced missionaries? How many return to the field? I think that we are possibly experiencing a great loss when it comes to taking advantage of the experience and training of so many people who return to the United States to put their children in school and then perhaps never are encouraged to return to the field. 7, 22.5% had participated in an apprentice program. I think that this finding underscores the importance of missionary apprentice programs at our various Christian colleges and schools of preaching. 8, a finding that I noted earlier with you, 70% had been back 5 years or less. 9, upon return, mood becomes lower in the second and third months. You'll recall that I said earlier that during the first month or two, you are enjoying, or missionaries, returned missionaries are enjoying mother's good home cooking again after an absence of many years. You are perhaps being honored at special banquets or luncheons or dinners. And then all of that kind of activity comes to a screeching halt toward the end of the second month and the third month, and one's attitude or mood goes zoom. And sometimes, in more serious cases, people hit rock bottom. Number 10, 45% of the missionaries expected difficulty upon return. 54% did not expect difficulty upon their return to the United States. And number 11, the last on our transparency, nearly 19%, or 54 of the missionaries, took longer than 1 year to adjust. And 26 did not yet feel adjusted at the time of the study. For example, I received a letter from one husband, and he said, "I hope you will excuse my wife from the study. I will complete my questionnaire and return it to you. But my wife, even until this day," and this was several years after their return from the mission field, "my wife, even as of this day, cannot confront the issues that you raise in your study." I wrote him a very kind letter and said that I understood and wished God's richest blessings upon them. But this is the kind of response that we're receiving from a substantial number of people in the study. Now, another interesting area of Leslie's study had to deal with those individuals who were most helpful to least helpful upon return from the field. In question form, the question read, "When you returned, which individual or group of individuals were most helpful to you in readjusting to the United States?" Now, you will note on the transparency before you that the spouse was rated as being most helpful. Number 2, friends. Then number 3, relatives. And I think that the most of us, as we observe this chart or transparency, would indicate that that's an appropriate order. We would expect the spouse to be number 1, friends number 2, and relatives number 3. Then four, as we quickly continue to scan the transparency, former missionaries. Five, church members. Six, college missions personnel. Seven, reading materials. Eight, personal counseling sessions. Nine, church leaders. 10, debriefing with sponsors or elders. 11, school of preaching personnel. 12, testing and evaluation. 13, reorientation program. And 14, family counseling. I think that we might make one or two pertinent observations about the list. One is that we would hope that elders and mission committee members of congregations would try to render more assistance upon the return of missionary families. One missionary said to me in the last 30 days, when we returned from mission field XYZ, we were met at the airport by the ministers of the congregation, the elders, and members of the mission committee. Our meeting lasted for 1 hour. We haven't seen anyone from that congregation since that time. How sad. Another observation that I would make as a psychologist, and obviously I'm biased in this regard, but I would like to encourage those of you who are elders in our class to offer to pay for testing, psychological testing, and counseling for missionary families as they return from the mission field. Very few of our missionaries said that this service was offered to them by sponsoring churches. Again, I think this is another deficiency, serious deficiency, in the appropriate return of our missionary families. It's one of the reasons why we are not keeping families intact or whole psychologically and spiritually. This then concludes some of the major results of the Leslie Moore study. I'd personally like to thank those of you in our class today who completed questionnaires for us. I might add that the 12-page questionnaire provided so much data that Leslie and I are confident that at least two more master's theses could be written on materials contained on the pages of the questionnaire. We wanted Leslie to graduate within a reasonable period of time, and so we finally had to draw a line to what she could cover in her thesis. I'd like to turn now from these excellent findings to a summary prepared by Norman Newding, that's N-U-D-I-N-G, of the American Lutheran Church. Mr. Newding has read about 8 theses and dissertations on missionary children. And in some of the remaining time that we have left today, I would like for us to explore some of the major problems of missionary children as revealed by Mr. Newding's survey of some of the literature, and then turn to some of the observations of Dr. Ruth Useem, the sociologist whom I mentioned earlier in our talk today, who works at Michigan State University. First, Dr. Newding's observations, and I would like to read part of Norm's summary. He says, quote, "The one universal conclusion seems to be that missionary kids are not socially sophisticated, and therefore this is the area where most have the biggest adjustment upon return to North America. They have difficulty dealing with the gamut of social relationships, and therefore have trouble with the, quote, good, end of quote, things our society offers them, such as drugs, drinking, smoking, dancing, relationship to the opposite sex, and sex itself." One author quotes Evelyn McNeil of the National Council of Churches as describing the reentry experiences of many young people as, quote, "values gone wild," end of quote. Missionary kids who return to North America have problems with such things as working mothers, the high divorce rate, the weakening of the institution of marriage, sex as a recreational activity, and the trivial nature of local congregations. Mr. Newding continues, several studies have compared the categories of overseas children according to the community to which they belong. The categories were business children, embassy children, number 2, 3, military children, and 4, missionary children. Now, he observes, in the area of world-mindedness, of having a broad worldview, missionary kids came in first place, with corporate children second, military third, and embassy in last place. Of the 4 categories, business, embassy, military, and missionary, the military had scholastic difficulty. Only the military had scholastic difficulty. All categories, notice that, all categories had difficulty in social adjustment, with missionary kids having the most difficulty. And I'll repeat that for emphasis. With missionary kids having the most difficulty. All have some difficulty establishing their personal identity upon return to North America. Embassy, and notice again, and missionary kids have the most difficulty, Mr. Newding observes. The key question overseas is, what does your father do? The key question in North America is, where are you from? Overseas kids have a hard time answering that question. They have become both a part of and a part from both the overseas and the American culture. Note the bind that they're in. If they state in their replies the overseas country, the reaction of their peers runs the gamut from disinterest to resentment. They soon learn that it is not productive to open that box, or that can of worms, as we would say. Some kids make up a fictitious location rather than risk having to go through the complete explanation. Therefore, overseas kids have 2 distinct types of responses. If the person they are addressing has not had overseas experience, which would be the majority of the people whom they encounter, they hide a part of themselves. Only with persons who have had overseas experience can they open completely. Therefore, overseas kids do not adjust to North America. Rather, they do what they have done overseas. They cope with the situation. And notice that sentence when we discuss Dr. Yassim's observations. She will make some important statements about coping. They cope with the situation. An important part of the self remains foreign, hidden, split off. Therefore, the overseas kid finds it necessary to create in himself a complex identity, one that includes the ability to withhold significant experiences while keeping open the opportunity for expression when a shared relationship is possible. And then I'd like to skip over 2 or 3 pages in Mr. Newding's report and read the last paragraph. Quote, missionary kids have a high level of patriotism in regard to their own country. From the position of superpatriot, they return to North America only to find that they know very little about their own country. They don't know who the sports stars are. They don't know the rock stars or participants in television. They don't know advertising slogans or current slang. They are strangers to the land they love, but don't really know. And I might add a parenthetical statement here. Through some magazine articles that they read, they might learn about certain things, but they have not experienced the United States. Mr. Newding continues, they probably relate better to adults than they do to their peers. So they have to begin an adjustment which is more difficult for them than an overseas adjustment to a new culture. He concludes, they need the help of their families, their peer missionary kids, and any of us who share their overseas experiences. End of quote. So by way of summary, you can see that Mr. Newding is saying that the major problem confronted by our missionary children is that of re-socialization. Trying to actually experience in a meaningful way the culture to which they return. Now, in the same vein that Mr. Newding has made these observations, I'd like to share with you some comments of Dr. Ruth Yuseem. Last November, I had the opportunity to visit on the Michigan State University campus, where Dr. Yuseem is a member of the College of Education. Her husband, Dr. John Yuseem, is a retired member of the anthropology faculty. Both Ruth and John Yuseem and their children lived in the country of India in 1953, again in 1958, and then the parents returned to India again just recently without the children. It was extremely helpful to visit with Dr. Yuseem. That's spelled U-S-E-E-M. And I am, of course, very, very grateful to her for her assistance. In reference to reentry, she said, the receiving unit must reach out. In our case, it would be the local congregation that has sent the family to the mission field. We must make a positive effort to reach out to the returning family. You will notice point number two on the transparency, that she concurs with the findings of Leslie Moore's study. Quote, there will be a 6 to 12 month readjustment period. It is entirely normal. End of quote. Number three, I think, is something that we have not known in the past. And it is certainly a helpful observation as we try to understand the behavior of returning children. Many children are so protected overseas, they experience a very late adolescence, whereas the normal period of adolescence is ages 14 through 18. Third culture children, as she calls them, may experience an adolescence which ranges from ages 18 through 28. Therefore, one could expect, she continues, a later period of adolescent rebellion. Third culture children, which would include missionary children, are often children until age 28. Now, let me say just a few words about her term, third culture children. She and Dr. Yuseem developed this term and were the first to mention it in the literature. For example, when a child leaves this country and goes to the country of Brazil, the child takes certain gringo values with him. When he has encounters with Brazilian children, then the values that grow out of that relationship are neither totally gringo nor totally Brazilian. You have a set of third culture values, a set of values that's peculiar to the mix of the people from these two cultures, the United States and Brazil. Hence the term third culture kids, or TCKs. Now let's go back to her observation that whereas in this country the normal period of adolescence is ages 14 through 18, TCKs may experience an adolescence which ranges from ages 18 through 28. And so while chronologically a returned missionary child might be 18, emotionally and socially that child might be 14 or 15 or 16. Not likely to be emotionally 18, although chronologically 18. And of course, this observation of Dr. Yuseem's is extremely helpful when trying to understand the immature behavior of certain missionary children. We can be much, much more tolerant as parents and as counselors when we think about the behavior of these individuals. The fourth observation on the transparency, TCKs are provincial about the third culture. In other words, they focus on the third culture. Their thinking does not extend too far beyond that third culture. TCKs, the second part of the statement, are not gregarious. They're groupy. They tend to run around together. They participate in activities together. Fifth observation, they have broad goals. Rarely do they have a career lane. Six, for children reared overseas, the U.S. is not home. Notice, the U.S. is not home. The third culture is. Seven, TCKs are turned off by what they perceive as the artificiality of the U.S. Therefore, many of them don't get involved. And she was the one who coined the term cheap moralization. Notice her statement about this. They too frequently indulge in cheap moralization. This is a danger. By cheap moralization, she means a statement such as, American Christians are too affluent. They don't sacrifice like we did, end of quote. Notice now statement number eight about a distinction Dr. Yusim makes between coping and adjustment. The statement, as you can see, reads, learning how to cope with American life is important. Notice this carefully. A child may not adjust. So she believes that we're not talking about a thorough adjustment, but learning how to cope with the American society. Number nine, of those children who are reared overseas, 80% go into international work. This does not mean, of course, that they live overseas. A young lady may live in San Francisco and work in an export-import firm. But of the missionary children, or TCKs, reared overseas, 80% go into international work. 10, an important fact to keep in mind as we work with our children, as we counsel with TCKs, TCKs must, notice we've underscored on the transparency, must grieve over the loss of their childhood, their friends, their memories of many activities and events in the third culture. So a grief process, as in the death of a friend, is normal in terms of the third culture. 11, major adjustment problems occur in about 10% of the TCKs. My observation in terms of my counseling would be that the percentage is higher than that. I think that perhaps she's a little low. But let's continue with the statement. Their rebellion is couched in the values which parents hold most closely. For example, TCKs will say, quote, I don't believe in Jesus, end of quote. Yusim says, ignore the content. Listen to what the children are trying to say. 12, for the other 80 or 90% who are not in rebellion, something constructive and positive needs to be done. For example, appoint an on-campus person to develop a Big Brother program. Challenge them to use their skills. 13, when a family has a rebellious child, it only makes the situation worse if the parents feel guilty. And you and I would understand this, of course, to mean that if the parents have committed a sin in terms of rearing their children, they have prayed to the Lord and asked the Lord that His grace might cover their sins. To be sad, yes, then. To grieve, yes. But to continue to feel guilty after God has forgiven us, no. Then 14, she makes a very, very important point. The loss of an elite status is very difficult for parents. And we might note that the status and the identity of the children is tied to the status of the parents. And if the parent or the parents are big frogs in a little pond overseas, and then they return to the United States and become little frogs in a big pond, This, to some extent, affects the identity crisis of the children upon their return to the United States. Now, what are some constructive suggestions Dr. Yassim has made about the adjustment of returning students? Please notice on this transparency that, number one, she states that we should involve returning students in service. Use the skills they have learned overseas. For example, let them serve as lab instructors in a language laboratory in college. Two, when returning, parents should try to match normal transitional periods in a child's life. For example, a normal transitional period would be the transition from junior high to high school or high school to college. Three, she makes the observation, many parents cover up their problems rather than seek help. She states, let the women talk. Some carry terrible burdens. Related to this, on the second day that we were together, we were joined by Mr. Paul Van Kleek, K-L-E-E-K. For over a decade, Mr. Van Kleek was the principal of Faith Academy in suburban Manila in the Philippines. Mr. Van Kleek said that the modeling of the parents on the field and upon their return was very, very important. He talked at some length about encouraging family members to talk and to seek counseling. And further, he said, missionaries need to put their children before their work. On one occasion, he said that a medical missionary said to him, quote, my medical clinic is more important than my family, end of quote. And Mr. Van Kleek's observation was, how sad, what a tragedy. And so family networks need to be strengthened on the field and as much as possible. Now, today, by way of summary, as we close, we have tried to comment first on a normal pattern of response, and we noted the four stages involved in a normal pattern of response in terms of the return from the field. We have made summary statements on the missionary cycle and the importance of all aspects of the missionary cycle. We have noted together the results of Leslie Moore's study of 288 returned Church of Christ missionaries. We have reviewed thoughtfully the findings of Norm Newding as he has surveyed about 8 theses and dissertations on the topic of missionary children. And then we have shared together the observations of Doctors John and Ruth Yassim of Michigan State University. Let me thank you once again for coming today. I thank the Lord for this very special opportunity to study with you.